You must remember this as the podcast dedicated to stories from the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Stories of sex, murder, institutional racism, bad men, sad women, fascist gossip columnists, and much more. Our new season is called The Old Man is Still Alive, and it's about directors like Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford who got started in the silent era, but were still making movies in the psychedelic 60s. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the best of the Eagles on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Let's talk to Sheila Kapadia right now, because the Eagles play in 7 days, and Sheila, of course, does wonderful work with The Ringer. We're also very happy to announce that Sheila, we don't have the day and time set yet. We'll get that set in the next couple of days, but Sheila will be back with us as a weekly guest once again this football season. And Sheila, I got to tell you, since you joined the show as a weekly contributor in the fall, I mean, other than that 2020 thing, man, they make the playoffs every year. You're good luck charm.
Not only do they make the playoffs, Joe, but year one was 2017. So we have 8 years, 2 Super Bowls, 3 Super Bowl berths. I mean, you guys are stuck with me. You lose me, and you know people are calling in week four if they're 1-3, and they're going to be blaming you. So
feels like a professor with tenure.
I love it.
We can't get rid of him anymore.
Well, that's a mere 1% of why we keep Sheila around. We love his insight. So for those that don't know, and I think most do, but we bring Sheila on sort of midweek when he's had a chance to tremendously digest the coach's tape and give us a real thorough report of what he's seen from the Eagles' offense and defense in the prior game and then obviously what it means up ahead for the future game. So, Sheila, we love having you on the program. Let's talk some Eagles football, my man. Let's start with Marcus Epps. This news might have escaped a few people. It happened yesterday. It's interesting. The Eagles brought back Marcus Epps, who was a starter, and I would say a solid starter. Not a great starter, but a solid starter 2022 season. Where does he fit in to a now crowded safety room? Who's the starter?
Yeah, I don't know if Vic Fangio would agree that it's crowded when he's cycling through these guys in the secondary and wondering who can he trust.
Sheila, let me say this. Notice I didn't say particularly good at the other safety spot, but there's a lot of options, hence the crowdedness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, the rookie Drew Makuba has the hamstring injury, so I'm sure that is adding some uncertainty to this. I thought after the nice preseason game he had that he would be the starter next to Reed Blankenship, but if he can't go, now you look at it, and is it going to be Sidney Brown? You know, I think this move might suggest that they have some concerns about that, whether they want to throw him out there in week one. Now, I will say this. This is a complicated defensive scheme, and Marcus Epps has not played in this scheme and has not had those practice reps, and these are guys, the safeties, who have to do a lot for Vic Fangio. So I would be surprised if he came in right away and started for them next week against the Cowboys, but I think you want to get him up to speed, add some depth, and who knows, maybe he's an option down the line, specifically if Makuba deals with these injury issues.
Sheila, is there any sense that you got from him last year or talking to people around the league? Did he get worse since leaving the Eagles 2 years ago? Because I'll just tell you this, and I get your point about week one, maybe he doesn't play right away, but the Marcus Epps I saw 3 seasons ago now, I thought was a solid player who should be better than these two other guys, unless Makuba grows into it fast and emerges and is your guy for the future, which is entirely possible. Did he get worse? Was he banged up? Is he the same level of player, or is there a drop-off, and is that why he was recently cut?
Yeah, I think it was injury last year. So his first year with the Raiders, I thought he was okay. And then last year, tore his ACL. I think he only appeared in 4 games. So he's battling back from that this offseason. Goes to New England, spends training camp there, and doesn't make the roster there. There were some conflicting reports about whether he has to be released or whether they were just not going to keep him on the roster anyway. So I think he's a veteran coming back from an injury, looking for a spot, and this is not uncommon in the NFL. But I'm with you. If you told me, hey, you can get the same guy you got in 2022, I would say that's a reliable starter. He's not going to wow you. He's not going to kill you, but that might be a nice option for this Eagles team. So that might be what they're thinking once they get him in and see how healthy he is and see how he fits with this scheme.
Sheila, in your mind, who's the best option to start at cornerback in base opposite Quinyon Mitchell?
Oh, man, that's I feel like I spent a lot of hours talking about that question this summer, and I change my mind every week, and I don't have a great answer. I think Jakorian Bennett, if I was looking at it, and if you're comfortable that he knows what he's doing in this scheme and you're not worried about him making mental mistakes, he feels like the guy right now that might give you the best shot. You know, Adoree Jackson has the experience, so maybe I'm wrong about that. But Bennett was a starter last year. He wasn't, you know, an all-pro, but he was an okay starter for the Raiders last year. You traded for him for a reason. I imagine when they made that trade, you know, they were going to Vic Fangio and saying, hey, we need to take, we're thinking about taking one of your depth defensive tackles and trading for a corner. Do you like this guy? And Fangio said yes. I mean, that would be my guess, given what they were dealing with at the time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would go with Jakorian Bennett at this moment in time.
How concerned are you, and this is not really talked about much, we're jumping right into full-speed football. You know, I know that the team knows what they're doing with the whole medical aspect of it all, but how are you in any way, Shiel, worried that we're just jumping right into full-speed football? I'm thinking about this in terms of, like, Zach Bond. Zach Bond, I didn't even see him practice. You know, I don't know how much he practiced other than walking through. And now, next week, in 1 week's time, these guys are expected to go out there and lay it down for, you know, 60 minutes. How concerned does that make you?
Yeah, there's a trade-off that teams around the NFL are dealing with in recent years, and we talk about it a lot in the summer, and it's the trade-off you're talking about. You know, how concerned are you about players? You want them to get at least a possession, two possessions in the preseason so that they're not hitting somebody for the first time in week one versus staying healthy. And I think we know where the Eagles land on that, and it's hard to complain about it when they had 21 to 22 starters available in the Super Bowl last year, when in 2022 they were extremely healthy, and that was a big reason why they got to the Super Bowl and had a chance to win it there. So I think they're comfortable with that, but it's not that your concern is invalid. I mean, they could come out and some of those guys who haven't practiced and haven't played, could they show a little rust in week one early on? Could there be a missed tackle here or there? Yeah, those things are obviously possible. I think you just look at it, the big picture, and they're willing to deal with that kind of thing, and I don't blame them. I think it is the right thing to do, but it doesn't mean that what you're saying is incorrect.
Yep, totally agree. It leaves them a little vulnerable in September, but seems to help in the long run. Shiel, let's, you know, one of the reasons we love having you on, you really cover the entire league, and you look at film on the entire league. Let's talk about the NFC and threats. So I think it's very obvious the other truly great team last year in the NFC was the Detroit Lions, until they got injured and were a lesser than. But they were legit. I mean, we should never forget that. Now, they lost players, like every team loses after a season. Is it the Lions or a different team that you think is the greatest threat to the Eagles within the conference?
Yeah, it's wide open, the NFC, this year. It's really interesting. You know, the AFC, I think you look at those top three teams and you say, we know who we're dealing with. The NFC is different. I would put the Lions in that conversation, but they do have questions. You're right. I mean, they were 15-2 last year, but they lost both coordinators. And we've seen that in Philadelphia, that is not an easy thing to replace when both your coordinators leave. They lost multiple veteran offensive linemen. So I wouldn't be surprised if they took a little bit of a step back. I still think they're going to be a good team. And then sort of the wild card team here that I've had my eye on this summer is the 49ers. And it's not that I think they're going to be a great team or a juggernaut or a team like we saw a couple of years ago, but they have the easiest schedule in the entire NFL when you look at it. And so I look at that and them bouncing back from last year and still having some key pieces on offense. I know they've had some injuries this summer, and I think that's a team that, you know, just keep an eye on early in the season. Are they beating up on an easy schedule and piling up some wins? Because we know the Eagles have one of the hardest schedules in the NFL. So that is a big, big difference.
Shiel, how much of a threat, I mean, they're a threat, but how much of a threat is Washington within the division of the Eagles? How close do you think Washington is to the Birds?
You know, if you looked at it roster-wise and said, you know, take the 53 versus their 53, it's not close to me. The Eagles are far and away a way better team than the Washington Commanders. But I'm a Jaden Daniels fan. I think if you watched him last year, I mean, this guy has a chance to be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. His scrambling ability his passing ability. And so we've seen in the NFL that a great quarterback can make up for flaws on the rest of the roster. So I still got the Eagles above him, but I do think that Daniels is just kind of that, you know, his second year, a lot of times we see quarterbacks make that leap, and he was already so good as a rookie. So there's a chance they come back down to earth and they're not nearly as good as they were last year, but there's also a chance that he emerges as just one of the stars in the NFL and they become tough to deal with.
Speaking of passing, let's talk about our passing game. Jahan Dotson took a major step in the right direction, I think, during this camp. And made a lot of plays. But Darius Cooper and John Metchie, they feel like they can be competitive for some playing time. What do you make of those guys, Shield? What do you make of this receiving core? It does feel a lot different than what we got accustomed to, you know, last year.
Yeah, I'm with you. It feels deeper than it's been the past few years as well. We know they've got the stars in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and those guys are going to get the big share of the targets, as they should. But it feels like you're better equipped to withstand if there's a hamstring injury or someone's out for a couple of weeks or the depth. So, yeah, I'm interested to see with Jahan Dotson, you know, building off of last year's Super Bowl and then having a nice training camp. I think that's been a very encouraging sign that he feels like someone who maybe Jalen Hurts will be willing to throw the football to more and will be willing to rely on more than maybe he did last year. And then Cooper, I was really impressed with. You know, I try not to get carried away with practice and the preseason, but man, every time I looked up, he was making plays. He has the look of a guy that knows what he's doing. And more importantly than that, when the veterans on the team start talking about a guy like the way they were talking about Darius Cooper, that's when you kind of know it's real. So, I think they're deep there. John Metchie, it didn't necessarily work out with him in Houston. He hasn't had big production, but again, I think he's a smart, reliable, tough player. I mean, John, you'll love, there's this clip that circulated when they signed him. He's blocking T.J. Watt in the run game. I mean, it's incredible. So he'll get in there. He's not the biggest guy, but in terms of culture, doing the dirty work, he fits that mold too.
Shield, the Jalen thing, everyone's got an opinion, and people's opinions differ. As this season's getting near starting, where do you settle on the greatness or goodness of Jalen Hurts, where he ranks, and how he projects for the years to come?
Yeah, I haven't done, you know, full ranking because I would need specific context. What are we talking about? One game? Are we talking about last season, this season? I would just say, you know, his job in this offense, it's hard to think that in that NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, any other quarterback in the NFL would have done a better job than he did in those two games. Now, if you said the entire season, yeah, we know they were ups and downs. We don't need to revise history. We're on the record last year when I called in every week that this passing game is not great week to week. So I think his sort of superpower is he does prioritize winning over everything else. And I think if you're an Eagles fan, that's all you want from your quarterback. I mean, he turned the football over early last season, and they said, Jalen, we're not playing that way anymore. We are running the football more than any team in the NFL. And some quarterbacks would be like, what are you talking about? I got this big contract. I want to pass the ball. I'm going to be making changes at the line of scrimmage. I want my numbers. And he truly seemed to not care about that. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what it looked like to me. And I think that's his unique skill, is that just mentally he's so focused. What do we need to do to win? That is goal number one. So, yeah, I think they're in a good place with him. I think they're going to have to pass the ball probably a little bit more this year when you just look at how defenses are going to play them. And I think they're positioned to do that well. Not to say it's going to always look pretty, but, I think Jalen Hurts is going to have a really good season.
And when our opponents throw the football, are Azeez Ojulari, Agbo Okoronkwo, and Josh Uche good enough?
You know, it goes back to the cornerback two question to me, John, because last year they were built in a way where the coverage helped the pass rush. It wasn't the other way around. Now, I know in the Super Bowl the pass rush was great, but for most of the season the coverage was so tight and so suffocating that the pass rush had a chance to get home. And that's my one concern with the defense. If that coverage isn't as tight, I do have questions about some of the guys up front and whether they're deep enough and whether they've got enough difference makers with the pass rush. So I think those guys are okay if the coverage is good enough and they're depth pieces, but there's certainly a lot of guys who have to prove themselves there with the edge group. And I would even say, you know, the interior defensive line, I like the first three. The other three defensive tackles on the roster, none of them played a snap last year in the NFL. You know, they've got a rookie and they've got two guys who didn't play last year. So I understand why they did it the way they did. They had to make decisions with the roster. But yeah, I think up front, they do have guys who would sort of wait and see if these guys can prove themselves.
Shea, we love having you on the show, man. We look forward to next week and all the weeks, hopefully into February. We'll get your prediction on the season next week. And once again, every week you'll be a guest on the program, which we just love. Thanks, buddy. Stay well. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week. Take care.
Sex, murder, the magic of the movies. You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Elliot Shure Parks. Elliot, am I already in an 0-1 hole?
It doesn't matter. You'll still win. You might be in an 0-1 hole, but you'll get out of it.
It's like how Spike said Fritz could have stood there for 20 seconds and still won the race.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, yeah.
So, Elliot, the Schwarber thing, man. We'll get to football in a second, but what do you make of it? What a night.
Yeah, I mean, I think two main thoughts I had. First, I do always love the communal part of when an athlete does something awesome. Like, everyone texting me, everyone tweeting about it, everyone watching together. Like, that's always cool. But the other thing I thought is, and maybe this is just, I always want to compare things. Schwarber's getting kind of close to passing Bryce on the all-time Phillies list. If he wins the MVP and breaks Ryan Howard's record, I mean, his MVP would be more legit than Bryce's. He would have broken a more important record. He's also been great in the postseason. I mean, I never thought I would say that like a year ago, but his season's been so good. I think he's entering the conversation of being ahead of Bryce.
Well, it's intriguing.
Play.
Yeah, it's intriguing. I mean, his 5 years, or what has it been, 4 years, won't be as good as Bryce's six. But I hear what you're saying. I do. I mean, look, we should indicate it's – listen, this is the last day. This is not meant as a rip of Schwarber. It is easier when you don't play the field. You know, I mean, you just four at bats.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is easier. But I hear you. Schwarber has catapulted himself into a pretty – high echelon Philly historically. I think that's fair.
The fact it's even a discussion, I think, just speaks how amazing he's been.
I think that's fair. All right, discussion point on Micah Parsons and the Cowboys. Let's start there football-wise, Elliot. So I actually thought Dallas got a good haul. Shouldn't have come to this point, but I thought they got a lot. What do you make of the trade? What do you make of how it arrived at the moment?
Yeah, so I don't know if I would agree they got a great haul, but I do think people are being a little harsh on the Cowboys. And unless you thought they were a Super Bowl contender this year, which they are not, even with Micah Parsons, I think they are closer to being a rebuilding team that is likely going to need a new quarterback soon, as opposed to a team that is going to capitalize on the prime of Micah Parsons' career. So I get trading away a player like that is you know, simplistically like a crazy thing to do, but I also think you get the two first-round picks. You don't have to pay him that big money, and you can use those assets to find what is going to have to be your next quarterback since Dak is probably on his last leg. So I did understand it from their perspective. From an Eagles perspective, I think this is really bad news. The Packers were already one of the top contenders in the NFC. I think they were going to be, you know, one of the contenders for the number one seed this year, and now they add Micah Parsons. So if I'm the Eagles, I'd rather have Micah Parsons on the Cowboys. Like,
interesting. John, let me ask you that question. So there's the right now, and then there's the next 5 to 10 years. John Ritchie, would you rather this trade had not happened yesterday?
Absolutely. This hurts the Eagles' bottom line.
But it's also
this
a one-year thing.
He could have been Packers team that just paid him for whatever, for 188, 4 years, 188
right.
Extended, and he's happy. He's going to be playing hard. That team led by Jordan Love at quarterbacking is, you know, on the up and up. Everyone thinks that he has a great chance at making a strong case for the MVP. Their defense now, holy cow, it's just amazing to think of how exotic they could get.
They got a lot. Let's listen to Jerry Jones. So after the trade yesterday, he talked publicly about it, the whys of this trade. Here's the Cowboys owner on trading Parsons.
Decided that it was in the best interest of our team to take the consideration that we have. We appreciate his 4 years. But we can take that consideration and we can win in our minds more than had we gone the other route and signed. That's not a negative on Micah. That's just unique to our circumstances.
Well, I mean, it's a wild situation, and it's so rare. I mean, Khalil Mack getting traded was notable, and that was, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, I guess, at this point. But this one's wild. So, Ellie, let's take this in another direction. I don't know how much people have thought about this, but this was one of my first thoughts. How does 4 years and $188 million to Micah Parsons impact Howie Roseman and Jalen Carter in, you know, about 8 months when he becomes eligible for a contract? What's the implication of a great defensive player getting 4 and 188? What will that mean for the Jalen Carter situation?
So I think for Jalen Carter's agent, it does set a new bar that you want to try to reach. I think Jalen Carter wanted to be, and likely will want to be, the highest defensive paid player in the NFL. If he has even a better year than last year, like, he will have an argument for that. I do think, though, I'd be pretty surprised if he tops Micah's deal. He's not an edge. That's just a more valuable position. Yeah. He's honestly not had the career Micah has had. Like, he's great, don't get me wrong, but Micah has been one of the best players at his position for longer than Jalen Carter has. So, look, he'll try for it. The price always goes up. A year from now, it'll always cost more. But I think ultimately, because of the position and he doesn't have as long of a track record, he won't get what Micah got.
So we're 6 days away from kickoff. What's the most recent scuttlebutt there at the NovaCare, Elliot?
So they did practice yesterday for the final time until Sunday, when they'll be back. And, you know, they'll start their 3 or 4 day preparation for the Cowboys, like their normal work week. I thought yesterday the big story was probably the signing of Britton Covey. We've talked a lot about who's going to return punts, if it's going to be Cooper DeJean. We, you know, briefly thought it could be Anaya Smith. So we go out on the practice field yesterday, and Covey's out there, like, as a surprise. They hadn't even announced they had signed him. So we'll see if he's a returner for week one. I think it makes a ton of sense. Yeah, he's been totally here.
He's good at it, Elliot. I mean, yeah, listen, he had a horrible start to his career in the regular season here. Two or three years ago, whatever year that was, he was a disaster for about half the year. Once he got good, he was very good.
Yeah,
I agree. And he's been here. He's worked with the coaching staff, obviously, so I think it'll be a pretty seamless transition. So I think that was probably the biggest news yesterday.
Elliot, is Marcus Epps going to be a starter?
They better hope not. I mean, Marcus Epps is a fine player. He probably raises the floor of this unit. I don't think he raises the ceiling. He is a nice player, but he is coming off an ACL injury. Even at his best, he was average, probably. So if this is their big move at safety, that is underwhelming to me. And they have to really still sit in the same boat, which is hoping that Sidney Brown or Andrew Mukuba play at a high level. And if they don't, Marcus Epps is a nice safety net, but it's not a move where you sit there and go, okay, they're good to go at safety.
So I'll say I disagree with you a bit. Now, sliding scale, if he's greatly diminished because of the torn knee, then I'm with you. I don't know that. He may be, he may not be. If he can give them what he gave the Eagles in 2022, I think it is entirely possible he'd be their best safety this year.
I mean, Reed Blankenship is
excuse me. No, I'm not saying better. I'm saying better than the other two. I'm saying at that position.
No, I agree for sure. Yeah. I think if you told me Mukuba, Sidney Brown, or Marcus Epps, if I had to pick one to play for the team this year, I would probably pick Epps, just because I think you know what you're going to get from him. But I also think over these last few weeks, there's been hope that they will go out and make a significant move at the position.
Yeah, I didn't feel that.
What about Cooper DeJean as the safety? What about that possibility? It was something that was discussed momentarily. We saw Cooper DeJean at safety fleetingly out during camp. Is that a possibility, Elliot, or is that just he's going to be the nickelback and that's it?
So he will be the safety in base defense. So in base defense, he will be out there. The question I think you're asking is, would he do it full-time? Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, a possibility. If he plays it in base, obviously he's learned it, he knows it. But, of course, if you move him there, then you're kind of weakening them at another spot, because I think he is arguably the best nickel corner in the NFL, and it's sets like a havoc causer in the middle of that field. So if Mac McWilliams is playing well, maybe you feel good about him. You can put him in there. But, it would be a drastic move to make him the full-time safety.
Welcome back, Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gilliam, joining us now in studio is Elliott Shore Park,
ESP!
Sponsored by Cozy Jewelers. Step up to the 50, that's Color, Cut, Clarity, Carrot, and Cozy. Elliott, how we doing?
What up? How you guys doing? It's an exciting day around here.
It is. There's a lot going on. Eagles Radiothon, the Phillies and Mets. Yep. And of course, yesterday, the 53-man roster was the initial 53. It'll change. But
which
it was
will change probably any minute.
Yes.
All
right. So what hit you when the first 53 was announced and how they did it? Like, what was your big takeaway just looking at the roster?
Yeah. So I will say, in all honesty, one of the more boring cutdown days I think they've had in recent years. I feel like a lot of times in training camp and in the preseason, there's a player that we're all kind of like foaming at the mouth, like, got to keep this guy. Like, you can't possibly cut this guy. There wasn't any of those guys this year. So when the final cuts came out, definitely interesting and noteworthy that Darius Cooper made it. Undrafted free agent from a small school. The fact he played well enough.
Tarleton.
You'll get it.
But that's awesome for him. Like, that's a good story. But, you know, the more I look at who they kept Cam Williams, the offensive tackle out of Texas. They kept Miles Hinton on IR, but they kept him. They kept, like, young tackles. You guys talked, I think it was on your show, Lane talked about like the potential of
it was on the afternoon show.
It was on the afternoon show.
But we talked about it after he was on.
You know, it's interesting they kept all these young tackles when Lane's talking so openly about, hey, it could be a year, it could be 2 years. So overall, I would say the roster cuts, no like major splashes or craziness. But those would be my takeaways.
All right, so now they just waived Trevor Keegan before you came on. So procedurally, why do you think they did that? Like, they didn't do it yesterday. They did it today.
So there's a couple reasons. One, if you waive him today, in theory, teams have already, like, I think he's less likely to get claimed if you waive him today than yesterday.
Okay.
So you waive him yesterday, the whole league is looking around and saying, all right, who can we claim, who can we not? Mm. I think today there will be waiver claims announced at 12. So we will find out very soon if the Eagles have claimed anybody. But I think by cutting Keegan today, A, he's probably less likely to get claimed. But the other thing is they created a roster spot. So that probably means they think they're going to get awarded someone on waivers, or maybe there's a trade coming, and that's what they needed the roster spot for.
Elliott, when you saw the 53, when it was kind of laid out, what stood out in terms of strengths and weaknesses? I mean, you kind of knew it anyway, and you've been watching it all summer anyway, but when it's kind of laid out there for you, what's standing out to you right now is like, all right, that's really stronger than most years, and that looks weak.
I think it's the safety spot. I think the safety spot is the weakness on this team right now. Sidney Brown, unproven. Andrew Makuba, unproven and injured. And I actually think that if Sidney had had a great training camp, or if Makuba had had a great training camp where he stayed healthy, maybe you don't keep Tristan McCollum. Maybe you keep Andre Sam or someone that's a little more developmental. Tristan McCollum, to me, the purpose he serves is week one against Dallas, he could go in if you need him to. And I don't think you could say that as strongly about Andre Sam or, frankly, Andrew Makuba. So I think if they add somebody of substance, look, it could be at a number of positions. It could be at edge. It could be at corner. But I think the weakest position room on their roster is safety.
So as we are 8 days away from the opener, do you think, like, if you had a guess right now, will they add something of substance before next week? Or is this, because I heard Howie yesterday, we played the cut of talking about,
he said he's not done.
Yeah. And he said we're going to kind of see, I'm paraphrasing, but play it out the first few weeks. And if we need to make some changes, we will. That struck me as, like last year, they're going to see what they have for 3 or 4 weeks, and then they'll make changes.
I think they would like to add something of substance. Now, the tough thing is, you got to have a team willing to trade you something of substance. And while we can sit here and say, look, we know a team like the Carolina Panthers, they're not going to be good this year. It's easy for us to sit here and say that, and it's really easy for the Eagles to call them, but they also have to believe in themselves a little bit too. So I think they would like to trade something of note, like a high-ish draft pick for a quality starter. But it just might be hard to do this time of the year. But all offseason, the vibe I've gotten is they know they have a treasure chest of draft picks to go improve the roster with. And you've seen them start to do it already. Fred Johnson, Sam Howell, Ja'Quarion Bennett. I think they are ready and willing to deal for somebody of note.
All right, you mentioned Sam Howell, the new quarterback. And I didn't realize till yesterday, because Howie spoke about that trade, and he said he watched him play on the Thursday night game.
Yeah, against Kenny Pickett.
That was the binoculars game.
Yep, that was a binoculars game.
I didn't think about who the other quarterback
Scouting
was.
Scouting quarterbacks, by the way. So you remember,
yes,
if my timing is correct, this was after the 2021 season when they were looking for another quarterback. Obviously worked out well with Jalen.
Yep.
So yeah, scouting quarterbacks.
Yeah, and he landed
Gets
both quarterbacks.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah, he got them both. What is the Sam Howell? Do you buy it that the Sam Howell thing would have happened anyway, or do you think it has to do with concern over when Tanner McKee is going to be ready to be the two, health wise?
So I think it's kind of both. Not to hedge here, but I think if Tanner doesn't suffer the injury he did to his hand, then you don't need him as much for week one because McKee can be your backup. But because you don't know if McKee will be ready, I think it increases the need for Howell. That being said, I think Sam Howell is a very, very good backup. I think he's arguably a better backup than Tanner McKee is. Tanner McKee might be a better player, but Sam Howell's thrown for 4,000 yards in the NFL.
Like that, a lot of games, yeah.
That is not... Like there's a decent chance Tanner doesn't throw for 4,000 yards in a season.
Now,
he has to get
fair,
a chance to start.
Like 900 were against that bad Eagles defense
still,
2 years ago.
Still, yes. So I think it has something to do with that, but I also think he's a really good backup quarterback, and their roster is better with him on it than not.
Elliot Shurpark's with us here. Eagles cut downs yesterday. All right, Elliot, camp is done. We are 8 days away from the opener. Do you feel better or worse about the roster since the summer started?
I feel worse. I feel worse about the team since training camp started. I value training camp. I put a lot of stock into it. I didn't think Jalen had a great training camp. They missed a lot of time with injuries. I don't think they had players step up at positions in need. Like, we could talk about Jahad Campbell was better than expected. Moro Jomo was better than expected. But we went into camp saying, let's see who's going to be the corner. Let's see who's going to be the safety. And I don't think we leave camp feeling any better at those positions. And preseason games are not the end of the world, but I did not think they look sharp in the last two preseason games. Nick talks about how training camp and preseason games are a time to get your fundamentals down, get sharp, get like a well-oiled machine. They don't look like that right now to me. So they have a ton of talent. I think they're going to win a lot of games. I'm not sitting here and saying they're going to go 9-8, but I feel worse about the team than I did before.
Hugh, you feel the same way? Because I feel the same as Elliot. I didn't get answers to the questions I wanted answers to. I don't feel as strongly about them as I did 3 weeks ago.
Are we talking about the defense
the whole
in particular?
Team. The whole team. Well, because Elliot mentioned injury. Offense has been more injuries, right? Lannon's been out. Yeah. AJ's been out. And then the defense has been about the guys we're not sure about.
Yeah, and that's why I said it's the potential for, even though you look at the warts and the things that the Dallas Cowboys are dealing with, you potentially have a chance to catch the Eagles slipping. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be a lot tighter than everybody else does.
I agree with you on that.
But yeah. I think that the Eagles are going to squeak it out. We're going to go through growing pains these next 4 weeks. That's how it always is. That's just how the NFL is set up now with these three preseason games and the fact that most of the starters don't play. We're going to go through growing pains, but they feel like those four games are enough to get them going so that when they hit their stride, they can just keep moving forward and you know, get to where they ultimately want to be.
Well, and to piggyback off that, like, I'm a big style points guy. I think there's certain games where you got to not only win, you got to win with style. You have to look good winning. I don't think these first four games are that. Like, they could win each of these games 3-0, and obviously we would talk about the concerns from their performances. But as long as you can avoid a 1-3 start, I think 2-2. Like, if you told me right now you can sign up for 2-2 or you can play it out and see what happens, I would take 2-2. Because I think the first four games are tough. I think that they've missed a lot of time with injuries with their starters. I don't think they'll play their best football in the first 4 weeks of the season. Like, a lot of teams don't play their best football. And I don't think you can win the Super Bowl in the first 4 weeks, but I think you can lose it. And if they start 1-3, their season is more than likely over.
Well, look at the Bengals in recent years. They've basically missed the playoffs because of September.
Right.
Like, you can.
I mean, and not just missing the playoffs. I mean, look, last year they were the 2 seed, so I'm not going to say they lucked into home field because they were 2. But the 1 seed lost, so they ended up with it. It is important to have games at home in the playoffs. And we've seen the 2 years they went to the Super Bowl, they had home field. The 2 years they didn't, they started on the road. So the first four games of the season are huge for making sure you don't put yourself in a hole.
Well, we're going to see it when they kick it off next week. But Elliot, what's your gut feeling right now on what it's going to look like stylistically? Because we know that we've talked all offseason they might throw more, right? That maybe this is a year they open it up, new coordinator. But I'm sure you saw too, the article of Saquon Barkley, Sports Illustrated last week, and he was talking about how he feels he's just entering his prime. You said he looked good all camp. I think they're going to come out and run the football a lot again until he shows he's not that guy.
So this year in training camp, Saquon had, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Saquon had, I think it was 91 carries with the first team offense. In 2024, so last year's training camp, he had 47.
Wow.
So he touched it over twice as much, almost to the point where I wonder if their sports science team has decided the best way to keep someone going is just to keep them going and not back off of them. But to your point, I think this is going to look almost exactly like it did last year. Now, the flip side of that is if a team comes out and is focused on the run, then you have to throw it. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going into the year saying Saquon is arguably the best player in the entire NFL. Let's give him the ball. And I do think one other change you might see is throwing the ball deep. Last year, they were 18th in deep attempts, but 4th in completion percentage. So I think trying that more would be advantageous to them.
Well, they're good at it. It's probably the thing Jalen does the best in the passing game.
Well, and also if the opposing defense is crashing the box to stop the run, you get one-on-ones outside, you throw deep.
And you get explosives.
Yes.
Yeah. And Saquon might not get as many explosives. It's tough to do that. All right, before we let you go, Elliot, you have a Phillies take for us?
Yeah, I think people are being a little delusional about this team right now. I think they were exposed these last two nights. Mm. I was on board to be excited, burn the boats. I love it, but
it's called copium.
Yeah, well, they're just not good enough, and it's unfortunate. But it's like when the Sixers were on their downfall. We can talk ourselves into it. We've seen it. We know who they are. And I think the last two games have shown this is an emotional Phillies team. And to lose the way they did the last two nights, I think now it really starts to set in. Zach Wheeler's not there. I am worried about the division, number one. But like, I think they really got exposed the last two nights. So I lost a lot of faith in this team. Faith I was trying to muster, to be honest. But even that, like, I've lost.
So I don't fully agree on everything, but I do think you hit something on the emotion. Like, they wrote a week without Wheeler. Like, and now it might be setting in that he's not here.
Well, it's also noteworthy to me that in Sanchez's first actual start as an ace, like, meaningful game.
At the Mets, yeah.
He was bad. Yeah. And now he's been awesome this year. But, like, it's different to take the ball when it's game one on the road of a big series as the ace, as opposed to, like, starting a game at home when Wheeler just got hurt. So I didn't love that. Duran's not looked awesome. Bryce had a good game last night, but also in that top of the ninth where they go 1-2-3 on how many pitches. Like, so I think we know these teams' flaws and this team's flaws, and it's obvious it's going to hurt him in the postseason.
Well, I mean, that's what it's been the last couple of years. It has been.
Elliot.
Kyle.
Sorry. Do you have any advice for Hugh making a dating profile?
Well, sorry. Give me a little more.
All right, well, recently Hugh said for 2024...
I'm going to start actively dating.
Well,
That's exciting.
He just had his birthday, so he said he wanted a girlfriend for his birthday.
Right.
So you did say that.
I mean, was that your birthday wish? You blew the candle
he
out?
Said it and,
you know what? It's funny how I didn't say those exact words.
You kind of...
I said that I'm
Well, you're not supposed
start.
To say a wish out loud, so...
True.
Yeah.
You inferred it. He inferred
some guy
it.
Everyone in the room could
say,
tell what the wish was.
Yeah.
Somebody just called in and said Hugh dated his godmother in Atlanta.
Yeah, It was
very awkward.
So sounds like it.
Kylie Kelsey and Jason tried to help him create a dating profile. We're getting there. Any advice for Hugh?
Well, so I met my wife on Bumble.
There you go.
So you can find love.
Bumble.
Yeah. Now I feel like is Bumble even still a thing anymore?
I don't know. We were looking more for the senior profile.
They're all still around kicking.
So what
I'm
would
not
my
trying
advice
to date
be?
Nobody my age though. I'm a little bit too old.
Well, no, we're putting
have
singles.
You picked the photos out yet?
No, not yet.
I feel like I would lean into like the former Eagle thing.
For real?
I would, yeah. Of course. You gotta
it couldn't hurt.
Yeah. I mean you earned that title. You're not
is that
like
right?
Yeah,
so
that's
hey.
What I would do.
Now,
I feel like you're
should
a photogenic
be modest
guy.
About it, former Eagle or Eagles Hall of Famer?
I would put Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Should I lean into like get to go to the games? I
can yeah,
get
oh,
tickets
dude,
to the
there
game.
You go.
I lean into that, and I'm a reporter. I didn't even play for the team.
He's just a beat writer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're going to be writing checks your ass can't
You got to play to your strengths.
Tickets to the game?
I can see Scott. Well, I had to ask Scott for the tickets. I ain't going to buy them.
Well, hold on. That's how you get used. I mean, you're offering tickets
that's
to a game.
True,
yeah.
But
yeah, I can't
I would say you got to make your best pitcher the first one.
Is that right?
It's like a quick, you know, you're just...
But see, my thing is this. Should I be myself or should I like wear my suit?
Oh, definitely
should I put
don't
the
be
suit
yourself.
Pick?
I think you
don't
should be
put
yourself.
The suit pick.
So I should trap them right first and then be like, ha ha.
They're dating switch. A reverend. You
he
can't
shows
put
up
pick.
In yeah, shorts and a yeah.
and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, ha.
Wow,
gotcha.
This guy dresses up nice. Oh, no, he doesn't. All right, Elliot, we appreciate
that. Well, good luck. I'm excited to hear all about
this. I
think you'll do well. I think
you'll
do well.
And we'll talk about it on the air, whatever happens.
We'll have to have her on.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's the goal. Yeah.
That won't go well.
That's the goal. All right, we appreciate it. There he goes. Elliot Shore-Parks.
But the Cowboys trade Parsons. Are the Eagles alone in the NFC in a class of their own now? I don't know. I think the Packers are going to be good. There are some good teams in the NFC.
The Commodore is going to be pretty decent.
Yeah. They're
you
an old
the
team.
No, the NFC is over.
Yeah, I agree. I here proclaimed it over
here,
last Friday.
Here we go with that hyperbole.
Well, you know what? You know what is over, and I think we can all agree right now. Can we all agree the Eagles are going to kick the Cowboys' ass on Thursday night? Like that game is not going to be close.
What's the definition of kick ass? Like, what do you mean? The way
a double digit, an easy double digit victory.
You mean the way the Mets kicked our ass the other day?
Yes. I just, similar to that. So. I don't know why you got to bring that into it.
I'm trying to get over it today.
I'm just trying to figure out what your measurement of ass kicking.
I'm feeling like a 34-14 ass kicking.
I don't think it's going to be.
On Thursday night.
I don't think it's going to be. Okay, TK, I'm asking you the same thing I asked the caller yesterday that called and said, you know, we overreacted about the Mets. What have you seen thus far from the Philadelphia Eagles this year that warrants you to think that it's going to be an ass whooping?
I mean, they haven't played. What I've seen is the Cowboys just traded away their best player.
Yeah, but knowing about how these rivalries go, they're usually a lot closer, especially when you talk about the beginning of the season, than they are at any other time.
But that's usually in a situation where a team doesn't trade their best guy and one of the best players in the league.
I mean,
days before the season.
But there's this thing called hate that's one hell of a motivator. Like hatred.
Well, maybe the Cowboys players hate Jerry Jones.
And playing above your station. Playing above your station is a thing. It really, really is.
Come on.
Like, you know, those
not
first
for the Cowboys.
Well, yeah, it's
Cowboys
it's a
suck.
Thing. I'm not saying the Cowboys win, people. That's not what I'm saying. But okay, perfect example. Last night I went to the University of Delaware, Delaware State game, right? So I'm walking up and I'm listening to the fans talk. And there was nobody in the building that thought that they thought it was going to be a blowout. 31-point spread. As a matter of fact, that was the line, I think, going into this game.
It was, yeah.
It was 31 points. And I had a friend of mine that he said, dude, I put $500 on this game for them to cover the spread. It was like, that's a lot of points. And they didn't cover the spread. And I will tell you this. Being at that game, Delaware State, there were some missed opportunities there where it could have been different. And that crowd got quiet. Like, that was the best feeling in the world when I saw that, like, DeSean Jackson's team come in there. They didn't win the game. But they showed up. And they played very, very well for his first game. And there was a lot of mistakes made. University of Delaware did not cover the spread. So that's what I'm talking about. They were in for a little bit of a fight.
Well, the Eagles will cover next week. I'm telling you, first play from scrimmage.
It's going to be tight.
Think about this. First play from scrimmage, Saquon, 70 yards of the house.
Wow.
Think about how crazy that place
would
go.
This place would be on fire.
Well, but Cowboys can stop the run.
Don't, I mean, better do you not, I mean, I get what you're saying, but don't you think, to some degree, the players in that Cowboys locker room, like, the wind's already taken out of their sails?
You know what, Kyle? I think those players in the locker room are like, okay, first of all, they're wondering what happened with Jerry and Micah. And they're like, damn, Micah got paid. Like, they're like, wow. Micah got, from what I saw, he got way more money than what they were offering him. So, or what was speculated that they were offering him. They're probably looking at it like he got paid. And, you know, they still hate the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm pretty sure Dak feels that way. Dakota out there talking about, yeah, going to the NFC Championship game, and I think it was against the Green Bay Packers.
Well, that was when he had Micah Parsons. He doesn't have him
anymore.
That's
what I'm saying, but I think that, you know, like Jalen likes to say, you keep the main thing. They're going to come ready to play, man. And let's not forget that we have some warts on defense. Like, the offense of the Dallas Cowboys is still pretty decent. We're talking about the defense. Their offense is still pretty decent.
No, it is, and, you know, that – the Cowboys might be able to move the ball a little bit, but
and they got what crazy ass George Pickens.
Yeah,
he might crash out before the season.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He might not last out the whole season.
The Cowboys. I think Kyle's right. I think the wind's probably taken out of their sails after this move.
Sex, murder, the magic of the movies. You must remember, this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's go to ESP. What's up, Elliot?
Man, I was always told it was Marcus that sang that song, but I guess not. I guess it wasn't you that recorded that.
It would have been way better.
Yeah,
and it's pretty good. It's
true.
A pretty good
That's
song.
That's a good point.
I mean,
yeah.
But it does sound like the song from Crash Test Dummies. Remember that song?
Well, I think isn't it a play on Take On Me, or am I wrong about
it?
It
is, no. Singing
I'm not
sounds like
music.
The Crash Test Dummies guy.
Amazing. What a start. Yeah. Anyway, Elliot, let's get into business, shall we? Yesterday, the big bomb heard around the world with Micah Parsons How do you feel this changes the landscape, everything, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Packers? Just unfold it for me, if you will.
Yeah. So I understand why Dallas is being criticized. You trade a player like Micah Parsons, like, you're going to get criticized. I don't think it's as crazy as a move as everyone else seems to think. Dallas is not a Super Bowl contender this year, and they're probably not going to be a Super Bowl contender until they get a new quarterback. I like Dak Prescott, but he's 32. He's coming off a season-ending hamstring injury. Like, they have major questions, I think, at quarterback. So to get multiple picks back for him and to avoid paying that type of money for a team that's closer to a rebuild than I think being a contender, like, I get it. I know why fans are not happy, but I think from a team-building perspective, I get it. I will also say, from the Eagles' perspective, I would not be happy that Micah Parsons was traded to the Packers. Of course, you play him less times this year, potentially, but he's now on a team that was a direct competitor with you already, and I think now is a much more legit contender, adding him to an already good defense, to an already good team that has playoff experience. I think I view the Packers now as the biggest threat in the NFC to the Eagles.
Yeah, it's a good news, bad news thing. Absolutely, Elliot. They're going to play them this year at least once, maybe twice, if they meet in the postseason. And that postseason meeting, from my perspective, I'm not a huge believer in the Lions. That postseason meeting could be for a Super Bowl berth.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, what you said first, I don't know that Jerry Jones, who made the decision, agrees with you that they need this rebuild, because he just paid the quarterback you ripped and paid the best receiver and traded for a receiver. So your contention is, okay, Dallas can get rid of Micah Parsons because they're not close to winning at all, but do you think that Jerry Jones thinks they're not close to winning at all?
So we'll see. I mean, Jerry Jones said last night that they could use one of these picks to trade for a player right now. And if they do that, then obviously not. Now, we'll see what happens with Dak this year. They have a rookie head coach, and it's a loaded draft next year. So I agree, like, Jerry is not acting like somebody in other moves that isn't going for it, but I don't see how you trade Micah Parsons and not view that. I mean, he's talked about how they could win more with all of the pieces they can get from this. To me, this is a long play. I understand why he's not going to say that publicly, but I think this is about collecting the picks, not paying the money, and realizing, like, there's a lot of holes on that roster. I've started to really dive into their roster, obviously with week one coming up, and they are devoid of talent at a lot of spots. Like, they have great receivers, but their offensive line's not that good. They only really have one good defensive lineman. Their secondary is in shambles. Like, they just don't really have a ton of talent. So, yeah, Micah is awesome, but I think they know, like, they need a lot of players, not just Micah.
Well, that's interesting, because I don't think you trade for George Pickens, and you're going to have to sign him in a year or two, right? I mean, you don't trade for George Pickens.
Didn't they not trade much for Pickens, or am I misremembering? I don't think it was a ton.
It wasn't a ton, but my point being, why get him if you don't think you can win? Why trade anything for him if you don't think you can win? I disagree that Jerry doesn't think they can win and that he doesn't think much of Dak. That's your premise, that he
right.
has realized, he has come around to the ESP wisdom that Dak sucks.
But yeah, I don't know if that's where he wants to come around to. But
I don't think that's true. I just think he got sick of dealing with Micah and he wanted to show everybody who was boss. I've spent a lot of time around Jerry the last 35 years. I am not surprised that he traded Micah Parsons, because Micah Parsons would not bend to his will. And, like, it got to the point where, as with Dak, as with CeeDee, Jerry negotiated Micah Parsons out of his affordability. He couldn't afford to sign Micah Parsons. I think that the three of them would have accounted for more than 50% of the salary cap, which is the first time anybody would have had three players accounting for more than 50% of the salary cap. And to your point, that's just not tenable. You can't add anything when it's that much money.
So maybe, you know, like, maybe the reasoning for it, you could be correct, and I think there's definitely a lot of truth to that. But I guess where I would land on it is, whatever the reasoning was, I think they are going to end up being better off like this, because I do think a rebuild is going to have to come, or they're going to have to collect more pieces, and they're better equipped to do that now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, just because at that age with that type of ceiling, but then you see the 50% thing of the salary cap, you just can't survive that way. So listen, all I know is the Eagles are going to kick ass on Thursday, and that's what's important. Elliot, with the 53-man roster, there wasn't that much surprising when the news dropped 4 o'clock on Tuesday. What do you make of the Marcus Epps thing and anything from the 53-man initial roster?
Yeah, so I do think they have a major concern at safety. Andrew Makuba's barely practiced. He didn't even practice the last 2 days. I'm starting to wonder if he'll even be active week one against the Cowboys. Sidney Brown has played a little bit in his career, but he's not played a ton. So I do think everyone agreed they needed a safety. Now, Marcus Epps, I think, raises the floor of that group, but I don't really think he is a ceiling raiser. And if you would have told me over the last two weeks, like, if they went out and added a safety, I would hope it would be a better addition than Marcus Epps. Not that Epps is a bad player. I think he is a very solid NFL player. He is coming off an injury, so, you know, we'll see physically where he's at. I think he can be a solid guy, which is potentially better than Makuba or Sidney Brown are. But I still think they need someone that you can count on to be a higher-level player next to Reed Blankenship. So, yeah, I mean, I think Epps signing is a fine one for the practice squad, but I think still going into the season, you look at that secondary – and we just talked about George Pickens a ton. Like, that's the problem with their secondary. They'll have someone to cover CeeDee. That's not the concern. The concern is the Cowboys are going to pick on Adoree Jackson. They are going to try to get that second safety confused and out of position. And that's a problem they're going to run into a lot, but especially over the first month of the season when they play teams with great receivers and they have a secondary that's somewhat being patched together right now.
So, Elliot, I just wrote a column, I think 2 days ago, that posited that the beginning of this season could be a lot like the beginning of last season between the Eagles' lingering injury issues and the familiarity between the quarterback and the receivers who haven't practiced. I'm not a just adds water kind of guy. I think you need reps no matter how well you know a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the strength of competition. So where do you think they're going to be after what I consider to be a very, very trying first four games?
Yeah, so I agree with you 100%. I mean, as good as they were last year, they are one Dallas Goedert 61-yard catch away from not being 2-2. Like, they were very close to losing that Saints game. Now, you can flip that and say they almost won the Falcons game, but I think the point is, that first month of the season, you can't win the Super Bowl, but you can definitely lose it. Like, if they drop to 1-3, their season is over. Like, maybe they'll make the playoffs, maybe they'll be a wild card, but they are more than likely not winning the Super Bowl if they start 1-3. So the first month of the season is super important. I'm a big style points guy. Like, I do think there are weeks where you need to win. You need to do more than win. You have to play well. You have to send statements. I don't think the first month is going to be that. I agree. It's going to be probably uglier than people want to see. So I just think they got to go 2-2. If you can go 2-2, you're mostly doing fine. Maybe another team starts 4-0. You have some ground to pick up. You just can't have that one crucial loss or that one crucial play that doesn't go your way, because 1-3 would be really, really hard to recover from.
And for all the people who like to naysay Elliot, no team that has ever started 1-3 won a Super Bowl.
There you go.
Elliot knows everything. Elliot, I got to ask you about Landon Dickerson, because I was stunned when I saw that he was on the practice field. Not I was stunned a day after surgery, he's just walking on the field and whatnot. It makes no sense to me, but what is that all about? Or is it, I don't know, is he still very far away? Do you have any information on that? I was just stunned when I saw him out there practicing.
Yeah, so I think he's going to play on Thursday night against the Cowboys, and probably the best indication of where they feel Landon is was Brett Toth playing pretty much the entire final preseason game, or at least a large amount of snaps in that game. If they thought that was a real shot, he was going to start week one, you would not have seen him out on that field, and certainly not for as much as he was. So being at practice the last 2 days, Landon's been out there. You know, just looking at him, like if I just was watching him practice, you can't tell he's injured. So he seems to be good to go. But we'll see, you know, once he's out there playing a ton of snaps in a real game, how it holds up. Hopefully he is, you know, feeling better, and this is not like he's pushing an injured leg to try to play, because I think that'd be a little bit silly in the first game of the season, but I do believe he'll be out there.
Yeah, it's astonishing how, I mean, he has to play in some degree of pain every game, considering what happened to him in college in his first year in the NFL, with the, not just like major injuries, but little nagging injuries. If you forensically sort of review him coming in and out of games and things that have happened to him over the last, I guess it'd probably be 8 or 9 years, he just has to be, his pain tolerance has to be superhuman.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we all watch the games, but Marcus, me and you from the press box get to see, like, when he walks off the field, there's lots of times where he walks off and you go, man, he's really dealing with something.
Between
and then he's
him
out
and
there the next – yeah,
between,
like, and
between
he's out
him
there
and
the
Kelsey,
next play.
Man. Between him and Kelsey, so, you have your binoculars on them all the time.
Yep, always looking for the blue medical tent. So right. he's a very, very tough guy for sure. Now, hopefully this is my concern with leg injuries and linemen that miss time in camp is it's just so hard to fully recover from a leg injury in season. Same with like a hamstring, like the season keeps going, the practices keep coming. So like it's hard to do. So hopefully this isn't something that impacts him all year, but as you said, someone that's used to playing through pain and nagging injuries, at least, or I guess I should say, unfortunately, this is probably something he's used to.
Elliot, thank you so much for your time. And what are you doing for Labor Day weekend? Anything good?
So I'm going to see Oasis tomorrow night.
Oh,
or two nights from
now. Have you always been, now, you know, I've been here for under 2 years now. Have you always been the traveling music guy, or is this a new phase of Elliot's life?
So this is Elliot's wife thing, I would say. Before I met my wife, I was not a big traveler, not a big concert guy, but she loves to do it, so she's constantly just booking dope concerts and cool places to travel. So I follow along. So I'm a lucky guy in that regard.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
How many Oasis songs do you know all the words to?
Uh-oh.
I mean, the only two you need to know all the words to, Wonderwall and Champagne Supernova. Like, that, those are the all-time bangers. Now,
so
I have.
What are you
going to
do the rest of the 2 hours?
Yeah, that's two out of maybe 30-something tracks they're going to play.
But those two are going to be banging when they play. So I'm very excited for that.
You go stand in line at the bathroom for the rest of it, right?
That's amazing.
Yep, I'll go buy merch during the rest of the song.
There you go. So, Elliot, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Yep. Yeah. Stop guessing.
That's awesome.
And now to talk about his Eagles Radiothon experience, Eagles starting quarterback Jalen Hurts. Jalen, thank you for the time today.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen?
Hello.
Ah, there we go. Hey, thanks for the time, Jalen.
Yes, sir.
So the item you have for Eagles Radiothon is centered around your book, Better Than a Touchdown, the children's book. So someone can bring their child and five of their friends for a private reading of the book with you, and then a tour of the NovaCare facility. Why a children's book? Why did you decide to write a children's book?
Well, it's always been a dream of mine. I know the influence that it's had on me, and so I just felt like it was my season to pay it forward.
I was talking to Jack earlier about the children's books, and I remembered a couple of mine that I remember even to this day growing up. Like, I loved Goodnight Moon. I loved The Phantom Tollbooth. Was there a book that you were a kid that you look back and you remember as one of your favorites?
There's a book specifically written by Tiki Barber and his brother.
Yes.
And I remember going to the library in elementary school and really gravitating towards that, and it's something I've held with me for a very long time. And so, obviously, you know, to be able to fulfill dreams and set goals and fulfill those goals, simple inspiration from a children's book like that was a lot for me. So you never know what seed you can plant for someone else through a children's book. So I figured, why not pay it forward in that way?
Yeah, you know what's funny? There's in my neighborhood, there's a little box where people can drop off books or take books. And I saw that book in there. And I used to work with Tiki. So I took a picture of it and I sent it to him. And he was thrilled. He still remembers that book to this day. I'm sure he'd be thrilled to know that you loved that book when you were a kid.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Can we talk about a little football here?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So, you know, not major injuries, but AJ has been suffering with a hamstring, and Devontae, and then Landon has had his thing. And there probably weren't a ton of whole first team reps with everyone. How do you feel going into the first game with the sort of limited time you've been able to play with those guys?
You continue to take it a day at a time. You know, I think given the quality reps that we have had and everyone that's been available, I think we've been getting better and taking steps daily. And so it's been a constant comfort that's been built with everyone. And so, you know, when you have a established foundation with the core that's here, you want to build on those things, and that's what we have this time now. So number one thing has been being confident in everyone as they step out on the field, and then continue to build and polish up some of those things before we get in some live action.
Mm-hmm. What's the off-season work relationship been like for you and new OC? Although he's been on the staff for a few years, so he's not new to sort of working with you in the office, but he's working directly with you. What's that been like for yourself and Kevin, sort of merging, I guess, your minds into what the offense should look like this year?
Yeah, I think it's gone relatively well. You know, Coach has come in and he's been here and he's been able to have a unique perspective on what we've done offensively and how we've been able to evolve and how different players have matured. And so even for him, throughout my maturation, he's seen those things up close for Smitty, for Landon and Dallas, and, you know, Dallas was established before then. But seeing guys grow and evolve over time, and I think he has a unique perspective on that, and been able to see the cadence and the flow of how we've done things over the past, and he's had a big input on that as well. And so, you know, he's able to kind of make his own way, and I see a lot of confidence in him in that. You know, he's come in very convicted in what he sees, and has a real plan of what he wants to do, how he wants to do it, and you know, it's our job to go out there and bring it to light. Mm-hmm. And continue to have those conversations, and you know, me communicate with him so we can continue to go out there and play winning football.
I was gonna say, man, you're going into what, your sixth year now, right? This is the sixth season, I believe, for you. You're going into your sixth year, and at that quarterback position, I would imagine the more. When I use the word command or control, I don't want to make it sound as if it's possessive from your perspective, just more or less having more, I guess, intel and impact and influence on the offense. Is that where you sort of see where you're at now in your career, where you can have those type of conversations with a Kevin Petullo and sort of put your imprint on the offense as well?
Well, I won't just say that. You know, I give it just a journey of its own. You know, I think when you have change of coordinators year in, year out, it's hard to build that within yourself regardless, mm-hmm. you know, but him having his vision and what he wants to do as a player, I'm just in sponge mode. I'm trying to be the best that I can be and take in everything that he's put on the table and trust his direction of where we're going. And then once you find that flow, then yeah, you have conversations and you tune it up and you get to where you want to be. But for me, I have that approach. I always have that approach. Experience is the biggest teacher. And when you've had experience with different people and all different, you know, memories and flows that you have with each coach from a quarterback's perspective. And so this year we'll find out how that flow. We'll find out how that flow is with Coach KP, and I have a lot of confidence in him.
When you think about the quarterback is the most important position in sports. And when you think about the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history, who I know you've studied and you've looked at, aside from winning the games, the best ones win the games, what do you think the most important traits all of them share are? They all play the game a different way, but I'm sure there are some traits that they all have. What do you think are the most important ones for a quarterback?
A common thing that I see is efficiency and production and how they produce.
Uh-huh. we saw some photos.
Okay.
We saw you're a Jordan Brand guy. We saw some photos with you and Michael Jordan this offseason. It must have been amazing to spend time with him. Is there any advice that he gave you or words of wisdom that you can share? Having that opportunity to spend time with him, we don't get that. So what was that like, and did he give you any advice?
Well, we've had the opportunity to build a special relationship, and it's grown over time from distant respect and admirer to kind of growing close and being able to have really good conversations, you know, that stretch different parts of the shoes that we feel in our lives. And you know, it's one that I value. I think, you know, pertaining to the game, it's the passion that you have, for what you do, and the work ethic, and ownership that you take in what you do. Mm-hmm. And I obviously wasn't allowed to see him play the game of basketball in his time, but knowing that he's been there and he's, you know, played ball at a championship level, you know, those conversations are timeless.
Yeah, I love your thirst for knowledge from the greats of the past, right? You know, you talk about your relationship with Michael. Listening to Peyton Manning talk about you and conversations you guys have had. I think I've read where you've been in conversation with Tom Brady in the offseason. That kind of piqued my interest. Those are two quarterbacks. You guys play totally different styles when you talk about the quarterback position. Yeah. And I'm wondering, what are some of the things that in those conversations you try to draw from them that you can sort of implement into your game, whether it's on the field or it's just in the classrooms?
Well, I think the most important thing about it is just being present and being hungry for knowledge, having a thirst for knowledge. You know, the game and the quarterback position specifically, it's a mental game. It's a mental game, and it's almost a sense of, I mean, it's not almost, you have to have a sense of mental, you know, development and maturity, emotional development and maturity to really play the position. And that's something that I've been able to endure and learn from over the past. And then obviously being able to refine your talent. Everybody has different techniques. Everybody expresses themselves differently on the field from an output standpoint. But being able to respond from adversity and get ahead of things and kind of have a good discernment in certain moments and, you know, have a cerebral approach to everything. I think that's very important when playing a position and just try and build on those things.
Jalen, one of the things that I think is most amazing about what you're able to do is tuning out the noise where you play. You know, I grew up here. Philadelphia is the noisiest place in the world to play football. What advice would you give someone who is having trouble with that? Like, what steps can you take to become someone who can do that?
Whether there's noise or not noise, it's a matter of staying within yourself and giving your best and chasing your passion and being the best as you can be. You know, it's in anything, you have to keep the main thing. And, you know, every day you go to work and you put the work in so you can be the best you can be for the group and the people around you. So that's the objective goal.
If I say someone is a great leader, what does that look like? Like, what does great leadership look like to you?
Oh, man. Everybody, yeah, there's different types of leadership. You know, I think, there are different types of leadership. Not one way, so I don't know that I have an answer for it.
Okay. We have one final question, and we really appreciate your time today. There was, I forget who, I think it was Elliot who asked you, there were all these pictures of the Super Bowl ring ceremony, and you had the ring in the box. You know, we need to know that at least at home, at some point, you put the ring on. So did you put the ring on at any point?
I don't know why we're still talking about this.
We want to know that you enjoyed it, I think. Like, we go through that. You played, but as fans, we sort of live vicariously through you. Yeah. We just want to make sure that you enjoyed it. That's all.
I hear where you come from. Whether I put it on or not, that's not pertinent, but...
Okay.
I definitely enjoyed it.
Okay, all right, for sure. As long as you enjoyed it.
Hopefully we can enjoy more.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the time. Of course, everything you're doing for the Eagles Autism Foundation. People can bid now at EaglesRadiothon.com. It's up to $8,100. A very special experience for you, your kid, some of their friends with Jalen and his new book, Better Than a Touchdown. Thank you so much for your time. We're so proud of what happened last year, and we can't wait to see Thursday night.
Thank you, sir. You guys enjoy.
All right, brother.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the best of the Eagles on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.